Chapter 6. When Our Friends Risk Their Lives.
They were now sailing across the Pacific on the Carnatic in the direction of San Francisco. On the journey, Passepartout began to ask questions about Mr. Fix. There was something strange about the fact he was doing the exact same journey as them. Maybe he was a spy from the Reform Club. Of course! Why didn't he think of it before? He wanted to make sure Phileas Fogg was really completing his journey. But did he want him to get drunk in that bar? Was he trying to stop his master from winning his bet?
I'm going for a walk. I believe Mrs. Aouda will join me. I'll see you in the morning at 7:15,
said Phileas Fogg, interrupting his manservant's thoughts. Passepartout decided not to tell Fogg. He was an honest man for the Reform Club to question him in that way. He decided instead to watch Mr. Fix carefully to make sure nothing else happened. When they arrived in San Francisco, Phileas Fogg made a note in his diary. Tuesday, 2 hours ahead. Wednesday, 3 hours behind. Thursday, arrived in San Francisco on time. As there was time until the evening to catch the train, Mrs. Aouda suggested they all go into the city, including their new friend, Mr. Fix. It became clear that Mrs. Aouda was very close to Phileas Fogg. He, on the other hand, did not seem to notice the beautiful lady by his side, but he did everything to make her happy and comfortable. There were people from all over the world in San Francisco, and Passepartout thought it was a beautiful place with its hills and views. On their way back, they went past a square where a large crowd of people were waving banners and shouting. On the banners were the names of two political parties. They all waited with interest to see what the protest was about. Soon, the shouts became angry, and they only moved a few steps before they were in the middle of a fight. A man from one group hit a man from the other over the head with his banner. Phileas Fogg took Mrs. Aouda by the arm. Passepartout pushed past as best he could. But just at that moment, a red-faced man with white hair and a thick moustache tried to hit Phileas Fogg in the face.
"Is this the American way?"
Fogg asked the man coldly.
"Better than the English way, coward," replied the man.
Inspector Fix arrived.
"Do not call an Englishman a coward,"
he shouted.
"If you want to end this now with a duel, we can," the man replied.
"I'll happily defend my honour,"
said Fogg,
"but it'll have to wait until another time."
"I'll hold you to your word. My name is Colonel Proctor, and I'm going east to Fort Kearney tonight. If I should meet you in your travels, take a gun with you."
And with these words, he turned angrily to another man while they escaped as quickly as possible. Now they were in America, said Mr. Fix, and buying a gun was not a bad idea. Phileas Fogg did not agree, but Passepartout asked his master to stop at a shop to ask the price. "I hear the train journeys here can be dangerous too," he added. The same evening, at exactly 6 o'clock, our adventurers left San Francisco to travel to New York. The journey that once took 6 months to complete now took 7 days on the new Union Pacific Railroad that took the passengers from San Francisco in the west to Omaha in the central state of Nebraska. From there, Phileas Fogg hoped to continue to New York for the final part of their journey, crossing the Atlantic to England on the 11th of December. After just 1 hour, it started to snow heavily. At about 9 o'clock the next morning, the train stopped. However, to their amazement, it was not because of the snow, but because hundreds of buffaloes were crossing the tracks in front of the train. Passepartout became very impatient.
"I can't believe this," he shouted. "This country has a modern railway, and the train must stop for buffaloes."
The train driver told them he had no choice. The buffaloes could damage the engine. They had to wait until they moved across the tracks. 3 hours later. As they went through the mountains in Wyoming, Phileas Fogg taught Mrs. Aouda how to play cards. Mrs. Aouda was a very patient learner, and they were soon so occupied with their games that they did not even seem to notice the deep ravines below them. Suddenly, they almost hit the seat in front of them. The train stopped and gave several loud whistles. Passepartout got up to see what the problem was. He saw the driver talking to a man from the next station, a place called Medicine Bow.
"The station guard sent me to tell you that you can't go any further," he said. "The bridge across the ravine is not safe, and it can't take the weight of the train. We have sent a telegram to Omaha, but it will be 6 hours before another train arrives."
"We can't stay here all night. We'll die of cold in this snow," shouted one of the passengers, hearing their conversation.
"Yes, but it'll take 6 hours to go on foot to the next station,"
said the train driver's assistant.
"I think I have an idea,"
said the train driver.
"We can get our train across the bridge if we go fast enough."
Passepartout was interested to hear more.
"If the train moves at its top speed, it won't be as heavy on the bridge,"
he continued.
"And we can get across before the bridge breaks."
Passepartout could not understand why the other passengers seemed to think this was a good idea.
"Isn't there a simpler solution? Perhaps..."
he began to ask the driver. The driver was not listening.
"No, no. This is the best solution we have," he said.
"Yes, but maybe not the safest."
Passepartout tried to explain that he had another idea.
"Maybe the passengers can go across the bridge on foot. Then the train could follow afterwards," he said.
"No, the driver is right. If we go at top speed, we can get across the bridge,"
said a strangely familiar voice behind them. The driver did as the passenger said. He blew his whistle and the train went back along the tracks about 2 kilometres. Then he blew the whistle again. The train moved faster and faster as it came closer to the bridge. Passepartout stopped and stared into the ravine. His heart was in his mouth. He knew the other passenger. Then he was certain of it. It was the colonel. In what seemed like minutes, or maybe it was only a few seconds, they were over on the other side, just in time to see the bridge fall into the deep ravine behind them.